The West Live. The West Live with Ben O'Shea.
This is the stuff that matters.
Let the people of Australia decide.
Election 2022. Election 2022. Game on.
Over the past 6 weeks of this election campaign, we've seen a small target strategy from one leader. We've seen gaffes. We've been bombarded with negative ads and one ill-advised soccer game. But now we're at the pointy end. What can we actually expect? And what are the two leaders up to on the final day of the campaign? Joining me now to unpack everything we need to know before we munch on our democracy sausage tomorrow is 7 News political editor Mark Riley. Good morning, Mark.
G'day there, Ben. We're almost there, almost at the finishing tape.
Exactly. For some reason, the only image I've got in my mind is of Stephen Bradbury in the speed skating.
Right, so, skating with his hands on his hips as everyone else falls over.
Yeah, is someone going to fall over? Now, how are you feeling after covering this for the past 6 weeks, and what stands out to you as the pivotal moments of the campaign for both major parties?
Look, I feel excellent and energised and really interested, actually, because I've got around Australia in the last 6 weeks, been to parts of the country I've not been to before, met a lot of people who very generously had discussions with me about what is shaping their vote and their intention, and filled my mind with all sorts of anecdotal but important information that has helped me to report this campaign a lot better than sitting in an office in Canberra. So I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I think the candidates are looking a little bit tired. I'm feeling a little bit tired to myself, but I mean, they're working harder than me, but they know now they're running on adrenaline. They know now they have just about 36 hours before the polls close, and they need to try and garner some last moment momentum. So they're blitzing the marginal seats, and Scott Morrison over there in the West doing that, trying to sandbag Pearce and Swan and Hasluck. Hopefully against the challenge that he sees from Labor, and then heading east, Anthony Albanese in Adelaide today with Julia Gillard in her hometown of Adelaide, looking at the seat of Boothby, where Julia Gillard was born, but also a couple of other adjoining seats, the seat of Sturt, which was previously held by Christopher Pyne. It's interesting that he's going in there, because when you overlap then the state election results there from South Australia, Labor did surprisingly well in a lot of areas that were traditionally held by Liberals in booths where Labor was only getting 30% of the primary voters, was suddenly polling high 30s. That might be the Malinauskas effect, or it might be a brand change in voting patterns, but Albanese is now trying to capitalise on that to try and pick up not just Boothby but Sturt, which would make things very interesting.
And I saw Labor's Captain Handsome on Sunrise this morning, Jason Clare, and he reckons the Liberal Party's had no posters of Scott Morrison at pre-polling stations. Do you think we're going to see that continue tomorrow on Election Day?
Yeah, I do. And I tell you what, there's not too many of Anthony Albanese out there either. joking, Jason, the King of Zing didn't say that. But look, this is an interesting phenomenon in this election. It does occur in different electorates every time where leaders aren't so popular. You don't see a lot of signage from them. But this time, there's very little signage, certainly of Scott Morrison from the Liberal Party. But I tell you what, Ben, there's plenty of signage of Scott Morrison from the Labor Party. And the photographs you're likely to see around the booths tomorrow will be of Scott Morrison with a Hawaiian shirt on and a garland of flowers around his head, with a ukulele, trying to depict the time that he was in Hawaii during the bushfires on the East Coast here. So there's a lot of attack photographs going around, not a lot of branding. Why? Well, because I think both major parties are now accepting that they're on the nose with voters, and they're 30% of voters are telling us they're going to vote for independents or minor parties in this election. That is a record. Why is that? Because they're turning away from the major parties. So strangely, and I find this very odd, we've had a presidential campaign where it's been all about the leaders, it's been all about Morrison and all about Albanese, and tomorrow the parties will decide that they're not the big pluses, the big positives that they thought they were, and they'll erase their images from the polling booths. Very odd indeed.
Yeah, well, this is an interesting one that I want to talk to you about. You're talking about that dissatisfaction with the major parties. We had a data analyst extraordinaire, Alisa Choi, on the show yesterday. She's been on Sunrise a few times.
She's very good.
This morning she's released her final analysis for the federal election, and she's calling it Independence Day. She thinks 13 new independents could pick up seats tomorrow, and it'll give the sort of a Liberal coalition government that'd suffer a loss of 19 seats in total, with most going to the independents, but losing a few to Labor as well. And that could result in a minority Labor government. Do you think that sort of analysis, it seems pretty accurate at the moment?
Well, it's fascinating. It really is 13. Wow.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not so sure it'll be that. I think in these, most of them will be in these seats where the so-called teal candidates, independent candidates, are challenging sitting Liberal members. And I think my view is maybe two, possibly three seats might fall. Three would be surprising to me, but I mean, 13 independents, that three would take us up to nine. I can't see where the other four are. I think the biggest challenges for the independents, Goldstein in Victoria, Tim Wilson up against Zoe Daniel there. I think that's a really tight race. Kuyong, obviously, Josh Frydenberg is in a battle there with Monique Ryan. Wentworth, Allegra Spender seems to be falling behind Dave Sharma. There's also North Sydney, Trent Zimmerman now seems to be polling ahead. So that's certain both sides are telling me that on their tracks. They're small tracks, but they are showing us a trend back towards the government in both Wentworth and North Sydney. So I don't know where the others. There was talk about Gray in South Australia, an independent challenge there, possibly. Of course, Curtin in WA, but Labor sounds the Labor and the independent sound a little less positive, a little less optimistic about that happening in Curtin. But look, there's one thing about this, Ben. All this stuff becomes academic. It's from 6 o'clock tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Once the votes are being counted, we'll see where the swing is. And sometimes, and particularly WA, you know, you saw it at the state election there. I remember sitting there on the set that night and just watching those numbers coming in saying, oh my Lord, I've never seen anything like this in my entire life outside of a one-off by-election somewhere, you know, swings of 23 and 24%. I mean, they're just historically huge. So these things do happen. WA can swing sharply. Queensland certainly can swing sharply. Tasmania can swing sharply. If either one of those three states do that, then the government's out.
Yeah, well, look, the last state election over here in WA, that was a sort of election you normally see in some sort of, tin pot dictatorship where there's maybe a bit of funny business going on at the ballot box.
Now,
you've been travelling around the country, talking to people. What do you see as the issues that will really move the needle when Joe Blow walks into the ballot box tomorrow?
I see two, actually. The first is definitely what we would, you know, throw a blanket over and call cost of living. So that's people's lived experience being different to what they're being told is the experience of the broader economy. They see all these indices, all these numbers, this data going up. That means nothing to a family who goes into a supermarket and looks at an iceberg lettuce at $5 and says, how am I going to pay for that? It means nothing to a family that goes in and says, well, you know what, I'd love to get the lamb chops, but I think I'm just going to have to get the sausages again because I can't pay for that. That's the lived experience of a lot of people. They see the jobs numbers, they know that is a terrific number, that 3.9% unemployment rate. But there are people out there working three and four jobs and they're to make ends meet because our expectations were shattered during the pandemic. Life changed for a lot of people and they're still trying to get back up to the normal tempo of their life. So all that I would throw encompassing into one category of cost of living. The second thing, I think, and it hasn't had a lot of notice in the campaign, but he's been there as a constant presence, is some antipathy, particularly from women, against the Prime Minister and his approach to politics and his approach to the national conversation. I think that is an underlying theme that many, and I emphasise this again, this is anecdotal, but many women on the campaign trail who I've spoken to have said, oh, just, you know, I mean, 2019, I thought he was, you know, good and nice, I thought, now, gee, I'm not so sure. You know, he just comes over as a bit of a bully, and I don't think he gets it, you know, the women's issues. And so that is a common, belief that's been expressed to me across the country, including in WA. And I think the PM picked that up too, Ben, and this was instructive to me. When he declared at the week, last Friday, that he can be a bit of a bulldozer, but, you know, it's all for the right reasons. My intentions are pure. I'm trying to fix problems. So I just rush in there and I try and fix things. That's what, it's what the Morrison men do, was an explanation with a positive spin to it for why women might see his characters being a bit brash and a bit bullying and a bit overbearing. He does that, he says, because he wants to get in and solve things quickly, and sometimes he doesn't take enough notice of the sensitivities of the way he goes about it. So that, to me, is the second underlying issue and could be material tomorrow night.
Yeah, I agree. It's certainly breathtaking that a prospective Prime Minister would admit a week out from a federal election that he's got personality problems. Really stunning. Mm. Okay, so we're nearly there. We're about to go into the polling booths. Every election throws up a surprise. What do you think we're going to be talking about on Sunday?
Well, you know, if Alison Choi's view is true, then we'll be talking about the independents. We could be talking about a hung parliament negotiations and, you know, who goes to Japan on Monday afternoon to the Quad meeting there to meet Biden and the leaders of India and Japan. Let's hope that's not the case. But I think that there will be surprises. There always are. There'll be seat results that come out of nowhere because of local issues, and that surprise everybody. My eye will be on the traditional places. It'll be on certainly the West this time. That's an interesting factor. That for the first time in a long time, I suspect that they will be going late and looking at the West with a greater intensity, maybe to determine whether we have a majority government at the end of the night, where the swings are and where they weren't and why that occurred, why there were swings heavy in some areas and not in others.
Mm. And now, I'm not going to hold you to your answer because, you know, predicting the outcomes of elections is a fraught business at the best of times. But what is your gut telling you about who will be a Prime Minister come Sunday?
Look, my gut feeling is that, and I need to couch in these terms, as I did in my column, The West Today, my gut feeling is that people will vote the government out more than they will vote Labor in. And I just think that the whole combination of disparate frustrations that have built over the past 2 years in particular of the three-year term, but in the last 2 years and maybe even to narrow that down to the last 12 months, those frustrations couldn't have been overwhelmed by 6 weeks of campaigning. Let's face it, Scott Morrison has out-campaigned Anthony Albanese without any question, without any doubt. But has he won the battle and lost the war? I think he has, and I think people will vote against the government in those key marginal seats to an extent that will allow Labor at least to form minority, if not majority, government. That's my view.
Mm, I think you might be pretty spot on there. 7 News political editor Mark Riley, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show for this election campaign. We really appreciate you making the time to give us these updates and insights. Thanks, as always, for joining us on The West Live.
Oh, good on you, Ben. Thanks so much for your generosity in having me on. Appreciate it.
To have your say, or if you have a story, email the team at thewestlive@wanews.com.au.